Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's time for Barbecue Nation with JT. So fire up your grill, light the charcoal, and get your smoker cooking. Now, from the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland, here's JT.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Nation. That's the Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, along with Camaro Dave and Commander Chris, coming to you from our beautiful Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland, Oregon. You know, Christmas, I hate to say it, is just a few days away. It really is. And I'm just wondering if you're ready. I'm wondering if you've made your meal selections, because I'm pretty sure you haven't got all your shopping done. But we're not going to be talking about shopping today. We're going to be talking about preparing the main course of your Christmas dinner with our dear friend Meathead Goldwyn from AmazingRibs.com. So he's going to be with us in just a second. Got a little Christmas music for you today, of course. And as usual, this segment is brought to you by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef the way nature intended. Meathead, my friend, how are you?
Oh, I'm ready. I am designated beef man for Christmas dinner, so and have been for years. So dinner is usually at one of my wife's niece's homes nearby, and young people had a big crowd. So I'm the one who gets stuck with the tab on the beef, and it's my pleasure. I love it.
Yeah, I know that deal, too, very well, because, you know, when you get labeled the cowboy cook and you actually represent a beef company, they all expect that when they come to your house for dinner, you know?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, I just ordered about $300 worth of beef for Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. So should be fun.
There you go. So let's talk about that. We've talked about it before, but I always think it's worth repeating. Prime rib is not an actual definition of a piece of meat. You've got a rib roast and the grading system, the quality, prime choice, standard, select, utilitarian, whatever you want to call it. So, and I think people get fooled about that. I mean, it's been very well covered over the years in all the food magazines and guys like you and me talking about it. But every once in a while, somebody still says, you know, I went to the store at Christmas and I bought a prime rib and it wasn't very good. It was tough. Well, they never read the label or they got sold a bill of goods. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it is confusing and it has been written about, but you're right. A lot of people don't know it. I mean, look, you know, that's one of the reasons you and I make a living is because people don't know a lot about food and we get to teach them. But the big hunks of meat that are cut off of a steer or a hog are often called primals. Mm-hmm. And the prime rib is the rib primal from a steer. And it's the big, long, slender muscle that runs along the spine. And you've got one too, folks, right along your spine. You can see it, you can feel it. There's this long tubular muscle that runs from your shoulder blades to your hip, and that's the longissimus dorsi. And the steers have it also. And it lies right next to the spine, and right below it are the ribs. And the same thing on a steer. So the rib primal are the front 7 bones. Starts just below the shoulder, counts 7 bones back, and it can run anywhere from 12, 14, 16, depending on the size of the steer, 12, 14, 16, 18 pounds of meat and bone and fat. And it is probably the best meat on a steer. And in fact, it's the very same cut that ribeye steaks come from. If you cut it into steaks, you have ribeye steaks, and it's the rib primal. And because it's a primal, it's called a prime rib. But you can't confuse that, as Jeff was saying. There's still different grades of prime rib, mm-hmm. USDA choice being the most common. And then there's a grade called top choice, which you don't often see on the label. We'll talk about that in a minute. And then there's prime and Wagyu and so on. So you, when you buy a prime rib, it's not necessarily USDA prime. And probably that's good, because USDA prime is really expensive.
Yep. Well, and one of the things, too, that, and again, we've talked about this before, but I think it bears repeating, people go to their local supermarket to order their Christmas roast. And maybe they go to a local butcher shop if they're lucky enough to have one, or wherever they get it.
Painted Hills.
Painted Hills, absolutely. But like around here, and I don't know how it is in Chicago, but I wouldn't think it would be too much difference. If you go to one of the chain stores, or even one of the kind of the new version of the stores where they're kind of, they sell a lot of organic stuff and that's very health conscious, but they'll still sell you a beer or a Pepsi, you know, type thing. But you get in there and yes, there's a Snake River or a Painted Hills or one of those, and those ribs will run for, say, $12 a pound on Christmas special. I mean, I'm just making up numbers here, okay? And then they've got one that's down maybe about $8 a pound. But there's always one group, one pile, and that's what I think they are, is a pile, and they're $4.99 a pound. Well, from my experience in working in the retail business, a lot of that beef comes out of Canada. Nothing wrong with Canadian beef, except they buy the you know, they're buying that stuff for $1.99 a pound, and they're selling it for $4.99 a pound as a Christmas blowout. And if you buy that, you're more than likely going to be disappointed after you've cooked it.
Well, yes and no. I mean, your point is very well taken. But let's remember, we're dealing with the rib primal, which is the best cut on the animal.
Right.
So it's going to be okay no matter what, whether even if you buy USDA Select, which is the lowest grade you'll likely find in the store. But if you get USDA Choice, you'll probably be very happy. I like to ask the butcher for USDA Top Choice. Now, that's not really an official label that you see on the packaging often. But basically what I'm telling my butcher is take a look at all those primals that you've got back there and pick the best looking one, the one with the most marbling. Mm-hmm. It's not only choice, but it's the top end of the choice grading. And by the way, these grades are based on the amount of marbling or the filigrees. It's kind of like a doily, if you will, yep, of thin layers of fat within the muscle. It doesn't matter at all how much fat is on top of the muscle, because that fat, now this is another myth here, the fat that's on top of the muscle cannot penetrate the muscle.
Nope.
If you leave an arm when you cook, it's not going to get into the meat and moisturize the meat. The only thing that will moisturize the meat is the fat that's within the meat.
Mm-hmm.
Meat is 70% water, fat is oil. Oil and water don't mix. There is just no way that fat cap will get into the meat. So when you cook it, it's a really good idea to remove as much of that fat as you can. And it hurts because you paid a lot of money for that fat. And maybe 20% of that rib primal is fat. So you're just, by throwing the fat out, you're increasing the price by 20%.
Yep.
But when you put your spices, your salt and your spice rub on top of that fat cap, and then you cook it, and then you slice it, and you serve it, the first thing everybody's going to do is cut off all that fat cap. It's just pure fat. So there go all your spices and rubs and everything mm-hmm. else. So if you're going to leave any on, trim it down to about a quarter inch or an eighth of an inch. That will shrink slightly, and people will eat a thin layer, and it'll help moisturize. And then they'll get your herbs and spices, which are really delicious.
Absolutely. And speaking of delicious, I know both Meathead and I are delicious in the way we talk about food, but we've got to hear from some other folks right now. So we're going to take a break here on Barbecue Nation on the Envision Radio Networks and be back with you in just a couple minutes. Please stay with us. Everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef.
Out of all the reindeers, you know you're the mastermind.
Hey, welcome back to the nation here on the Envision Radio Network. I'm JT. We've got Meathead Goldwyn with us from AmazingRibs.com. He's our holiday specialist. Before we talk to Meathead again, if you'd like to
eat. I like that. You know, I will celebrate any holiday. You are absolutely right. Thank you. I'm going to use that title.
You can. You can. It's my gift to you for Christmas. How's that? If you want to email us, it's really easy.
Holiday
it's
specialist.
BarbecueBBQ@SalemPDX.com. You can also go on SoundCloud and look at the archive of our shows. And if you just happen to join the Pitmasters Club at AmazingRibs.com, you have some access to some of our shows there, too, that that Meathead provides to you, that kind of a special listening audience treat. So you've got that. And there's a little pitch for your Pitmasters Club, which is a great thing.
You can
do all kinds of stuff on there. Facebook, Barbecue Nation with JT, Twitter, CowCook57. I can go on, but that's not as important as talking about Christmas dinner, especially serving beef. Let's talk about cooking it. You know, there's all kinds of, and every year, I should back up, and I didn't finish that sentence. There are all kinds of ways that people profess that they cook their rib roast. Every year, somebody comes out with another one that says, okay, turn it up to 472.5 degrees. You got to get that half degree in there.
And you leave
it for 17 1/3 minutes, and then you dance around in circles three times, open an umbrella in the house, and, you know, I mean, it's like, my God.
Yeah, my favorite is, I think there's one where you turn on the oven to 500,
yep,
and you put it in the oven, and then you turn the oven off and walk away or something
right,
like that.
Right, right, yeah.
You know, there's all manner of superstition and mythology surrounding this, but it's really very simple. Whenever you walk into the kitchen or out to your grill, you are beginning a physics and chemistry experiment, and the laws of physics apply. And it's really important to understand some very basic core concepts. Heat is energy, and you are putting energy into this big hunk of meat. And it moves slowly from the surface to the center. And as it moves, it warms the meat up. And if you just pop it in a 300 or a 400 or a 500 degree oven, the exterior is going to warm up fairly quickly, but the interior is going to remain cold until the heat marches down towards the center.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you take it out and you cut into it, you're going to have a very dark surface, and then a layer of tan, and then a layer of light tan, and then a layer of pink, and then finally, in the center, you'll have that nice rosy medium rare, which is the most tender and the most juicy temperature of the meat, 130 to 135 degrees. So you get this rainbow effect. And you can't avoid it because the meat is thick and tubular. But you can outsmart it, and you can do it in a fashion where there's more of that rosy red 130 to 135 degree meat. And the way to do that is you cook the meat at a very low temperature. Because the heat moves slowly through the meat, if you start at a low temperature, you give it a chance to warm more evenly. And you don't get this layering effect. The problem is when you're done, when it hits the perfect 130 to 135, you don't have a very good dark crust. That dark crust comes from high heat.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do is you start by warming it gently, and then if you're doing it on a grill, you move it directly over high heat, as hot as you can get it, lift the lid so all the energy is just on one side, on the underside, and you pound it with energy until you darken the surface, roll it a quarter turn, darken the surface, roll it a quarter turn, darken the surface, and now you've got a beautiful rosy interior and a nice dark crust. And if you're doing it indoors, you can do it in a similar fashion. Put it on bake and gently warm it at around 200, 225 degrees. And then when it's almost ready, when it's about 120, if you're shooting for 130, 135, when it gets up to about 120 or so, then switch to broil.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're on broil, you'll pound the surface with heat, and you rotate, pound it, rotate, pound it, and you'll get a beautiful dark crust and perfectly cooked in the center. And that's a technique called reverse sear. And it works much better than when you sear it at the beginning.
Yep.
Because if you sear it at the beginning, you're loading up the surface with energy, and now you're going to get the rainbow effect.
You know, one thing, too, is we should probably mention this. When you're doing it outside and you're doing it over direct heat, it doesn't take that long to get that nice brown crust. So don't do that and walk away for 10 minutes.
Yeah, don't go running for a beer to the bathroom.
Yeah. Because you're going to run into trouble with that.
Just stand right there. And I do this every Christmas in the Chicago area, and I've been out there in 0-degree weather. But you've just got to keep an eye on it and the lid up.
Yep.
So that you're only hitting one side with the heat. Now there's a corollary to this whole process, and that is remove the bones. Now
mm-hmm.
I know that a standing rib roast, which is what you call it when you've got all the bones on there,
right,
is really a glorious festival presentation. But those bones are like the heat shield on the space shuttle. They're going to block the heat and reflect the heat so that it can't get to the meat. And that's why, if you think about it, when you have a ribeye steak or a rib roast like this with the bone in, next to the bone, the meat is almost raw, or it's very, very rare.
Mm-hmm.
On the opposite side, it's cooked perfectly. Well, I'm a control freak. I want it cooked perfectly all over. So I will remove the bones before I cook my Christmas roast, and I'll put the bones in the freezer or in the fridge, and that's another meal. I can get dinner for two out of a 7-bone rib roast.
Oh, absolutely.
And that is grilled or smoked beef ribs is just absolutely spectacular. And you don't have to leave a lot of meat on there because there's meat in between the bones. Just slice it off or have your butcher slice it off. And now you've got this longissimus muscle, the tubular muscle, that is perfectly round, and you can cinch it up with string so it's closer to round, and it'll be perfectly cooked throughout if you use this reverse sear technique that I described. And you'll be able to get your spices all over the surface of the meat. With the bones on, they're covering almost a third of the meat.
Right.
You're not going to be able to spice the meat or season the meat. So off go the bones. That's a whole nother meal, and on go the spices and herbs.
There you go. We're going to take a break here on Barbecue Nation on the Envision Radio Networks. Meathead and I will be back in a couple of minutes. You're going to hear a little Elvis in between there, a little Blue Christmas. And we're going to be talking about something that a lot of people do at Christmas, which is Christmas hams. And we're going to be talking about that when we come back. Please stay with us. Hey, everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. Hey, welcome back to the Nation, Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, and today we're visiting with our good buddy Meathead Goldwyn. who is our holiday specialist. I'm going to give him that name again. And so
I like that.
He's stuck with that from now on. Also, we'd like to thank Painted Hills Natural Beef, beef just like Grandpa used to raise. That's always been a big supporter of the show. Real quick, we've got a few minutes here. I'm going to skip from the holiday stuff and go tell us about meet up in Memphis with your trip next spring.
AmazingRibs.com, our website, we're sponsoring a convention for barbecue lovers in Memphis, a great barbecue city. There's never been a convention for barbecue lovers. There's a small convention for the business, for restaurateurs and caterers who do barbecue, but there's never been one for us backyard folks.
Right.
So we're putting one on next summer in July, end of July, early August, July 31st, August 1st and 2nd, I think, are the dates. Information is on AmazingRibs.com. We've got some really good speakers, and we're going to get on buses and go visit some of the best barbecue joints in Memphis. Should be a lot of fun, hopefully, if it's a success, it'll become an annual event.
That would be fun. That'd be a lot of fun. And
I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, as we teased in the prior segment, one of the things that people do, and I love them, is they buy something like a spiral-cut ham, a honey-baked ham. Smithfield has spiral-cut products. Most any major grocery outlet chain will have their version of a spiral-cut ham, and they're good. They're good. But the one thing that I see, and I've suffered the affliction of at times when I've been a guest at somebody's house, is
I know where you're going.
They overcook it, and it's pretty dry. You know,
it's
you can actually see the spiral cuts have kind of wilted over. You know, they've been over because they got too hot, and there's a nice ring of burnt because that ham does have fat on the outside of it, and that'll burn that ham, and then it leans over anyway. So I thought we could give our listeners some recommendations for cooking and those hams are already cured. They're cooked. You're just kind of reheating them in a fashion.
Yeah, well, they're both cured and cooked. Those are separate processes.
Right.
Curing is a process of salting it, and there's a preservative that makes it pink called nitrate. And it's a nitrite or nitrate that is used for hot dogs and corned beef, and it's what gives it its special ham flavor, but they are pre-cooked, so all you have to do is warm them, and 140 to 145 degrees is enough. This is one of those classic cases where a good digital thermometer will really save your butt, because if it's so easy to overcook these things, and it doesn't take it long to get up to 140, 145. Now, once again, we were talking physics here. If you've got this ham and it's got these spiral cuts in them, and you let those spiral cuts open up so that there's air in between, that warm air is going to get in between those slices, and it's not going to take long at all for those little thin slices to heat up to 140, 145. So the better practice, and by the way, in that as it's heating up, it will dehydrate, it will dry out.
Right.
So the better practice is to scrunch it up so it's one thermal mass, one solid ball, and gently at a low temp so it doesn't dry out, warm it to about 140, get a good digital thermometer. You can get one for $30 or less. We have a buyer's guide to thermometers on our website. And you can order them from, we don't sell them, but you can order them from Amazon or whatever. They'll give you an exact reading in 5 seconds or less. And that's what you want. A good technique is to begin the process by wrapping it in foil and put a little something like your glaze in there, or pineapple juice, or apple juice, or something, a thick glaze of like apricot jam or something. Wrap it in foil and warm it, and then you take it out, and you just, like we were talking about a minute ago with the beef roast, warm it gently, then take it out and put it over direct heat and get that exterior crust good and crunchy, Be careful, though, if you're using a sweet glaze, it can burn. Sugar burns at a pretty low temp, and it can burn and blacken. So you just want to keep a close eye on it and heat it, build that crust at the end. And a sweet glaze, apricot, peach is really a classic. I've got a whole recipe for this technique that will walk you through it step by step on AmazingRibs.com, and a recipe for a glaze or two that are mustard is a good glaze to use. Mustard and brown sugar, or mustard and molasses, or mustard and maple syrup. A variety of things you can do with it. Have a lot of fun with it.
I got to tell you, I am a fan of the sweet, you know, kind of brown sugary type glaze, especially when they get crunchy. And especially, here's the part that, you know, I know what I'm talking about. The next day, when you have it as, put it in a ham sandwich the next day. Oh, man, I just think that is heaven on earth. I really do.
And especially if you didn't overcook it the first day, it can be still moist.
Oh, yeah.
When it's cold day two. Yes,
oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if you're looking for a good glaze, there's one on our site called Danny Golden's Glaze, and it's been around for decades. Some guy in New Mexico owned a barbecue joint, created this really simple, but it's just a classic, and it's just super on ham.
Love it. Absolutely love it. You know, I love beef, as you can tell and know, but I think my second favorite is ham. I just love ham, and I like it all. I like chicken and fish, and I love all that stuff. You know?
I like ham a lot, but I think you skipped right on past the lamb. And
well, that's coming up next.
I am a huge fan of rack of lamb and lamb loin chops and lamb shoulder. I just love lamb.
Oh, it's great. Well, we've got about 3 minutes. So somebody goes to the store, somebody's made a special request and say, can you make me a leg of lamb for Christmas dinner? So give them some hints here. Like I said, we got about 3 minutes, and that's about what it would take.
Well, that's just not going
to
happen, though. I'll tell you why. Lamb is the most misunderstood meat in our grocery store. I just adore lamb when it's cooked like beef. It to medium rare, 130, 135 degrees with a nice dark crust. And you want young lamb, not mature mutton.
Right.
Mature mutton can have a little bit of a gamey flavor, and not everybody likes it. And one of the things that's happened to a lot of people is they've eaten lamb, particularly as a kid, that is cooked, overcooked. It is cooked to well done, and it's gray and brown and flavorless. And then it's served with this mint jelly, and it's just awful stuff. A leg of lamb can be fantastic, but you face the same problem with a leg of lamb as you do with a raw ham, not a cure ham.
Right.
It's a funnel shape. It's really fat at one end and narrow at the other end. A leg of lamb starts at the hip and goes down to the knee, so it's just like your thigh.
Sure.
It's thicker at one end and narrower at the other, and so it causes a cooking problem that by the time the thick part is perfectly cooked, the thin part is overcooked. And the solution to that is to remove the bone and lay it out flat, and then season it on all sides and cook it like a big flat thing, like a giant. It ends up jaggedy, but that's a whole complicated process. Leg of lamb is wonderful, but it's really hard to cook properly. The best cuts on the lamb is the same cut as the beef primal. It's the rib primal on the lamb, and it's called a rack of lamb. And it's the same thing. It's the longissimus muscle with the bones on it, only the longissimus on a lamb, instead of being 4 or 5 inches thick like it is on beef, it's maybe an inch and a half or 2 inches. And also the other thing is lamb fat can be very fun. It can be odd tasting. Not everybody likes it, but the meat itself is spectacular. So you really want to remove most of the fat from a lamb.
That's what my wife keeps telling me. You got to remove most of the fat. But I'm,
yeah, right.
I have not paid attention to what she has said so far.
Time to get your gym membership.
Yeah.
For the first of the year.
Yeah. Well, that's probably not going to happen either. Anyway, Meathead and I will be back in just a minute here on The Nation. Please stay with us. Hey, everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation here on the Envision Radio Networks. I'm JT, along with Camaro Dave and Commander Chris, and our holiday specialist, Meathead Goldwyn from AmazingRibs.com. I think you're stuck with that moniker now, my friend.
I love it, though. But, you know, I love parties. I love celebrations. I love holidays. I celebrate them all, whether it's my religion or not. You'll never offend me by wishing me a happy Kwanzaa or whatever. I'll take it and love it. Thank you very much. Let's celebrate.
Absolutely. So the one thing we didn't talk about, and we were talking about this off the air, is a tenderloin. And and tenderloins are magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
And so why don't you share your thoughts with how to prepare a tenderloin quickly?
Well, that is the other great, spectacular Christmas roast, the beef primal, which we talked about, or the prime rib. And the other one is the tenderloin. And it is like the beef primal. It's a long tubular muscle. It's a little smaller. It lays further down on the steer under the ribs, further back. And it is the most tender meat on the animal. It hardly works at all. So it is the most tender. But it's not as flavorful because it doesn't have the marbling that the prime rib has. But it's just hugely popular, and it's really a spectacular piece. It's a long tube, but it does have a fat end and a skinny end. And so just like we were talking about leg of lamb, whenever you've got a fat end or a skinny end, you end up with something that's either undercooked or something that's overcooked. But that can also work in favor if you've got a big crowd. There's almost always Aunt Mildred who wants her steak or her beef cooked well done, and Uncle Harry who wants it still mooing.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got that. So you it usually comes in a cryovac or just a plastic bag. And when you pull it out of the bag, sometimes it'll smell a little odd. That's just because it's been cooped up in the bag. Don't let that scare you. It'll aerate out. So if at first it smells a little weird, don't freak out. And just clean, you know, dump out the liquids, and there's some silver skin on it. Silver skin is this very thin layer of elasticy connective tissue. And when it's heated, it will shrink, and it can get very tough. So you need to remove that, and you need a sharp. I use a fisherman's fillet knife, a cheaper Apollo. $19 at your Walmart or your fishing supply store. Boy, it's got a wicked sharp point and a wicked sharp blade, really lightweight and thin and flexible, and it's great for that sort of thing. And you just get under there and you peel off that and you get the fat trimmed off. I just did a video on how to take a beef tenderloin and trim it up. And the center section of the beef tenderloin is perfectly tubular. If you remove the fat end and the skinny end, and that center section is what's known as the Chateaubriand. And that is enough to feed three or four people or more. And it is one of the most expensive pieces of meat on the animal. And I show you in this video how to make a Chateaubriand. And then I've got the recipe for that on the website also. And that's, if you don't have as many people to serve, the primal, the rib primal, will serve 12, 13, 14 people. A Chateaubriand, maybe 6, 8, depending on how many people
right.
you got.
Right. The tenderloin. But you got to be careful because it's both my cousin and my cousin Tim and my friend Brent have said you got to watch the big end because sometimes if the big end is too big, then it's what they call it bull meat, meaning that animal was really old when they butchered it. And so, so you've got to kind of watch that. He goes, because they won't be as tender as, you know, a steer that's, you know, 24 months old or something like that. So it's just,
but it's still going to be tender. And I tell you, there's a couple of flaps of meat up there. If you do it right, there's a strip of muscle along the side. They're called the chain.
Right.
And on the fat end, trim a lot. This video shows you how to trim it off. And then tail end, you trim it off. What happens is when you're done, you end up with the Chateaubriand on the center section. And I said maybe feed 6 or 8, but it's probably 4 to 6, not 8. You end up with the Chateaubriand in the center section, which is just primo stuff.
Right.
But the trimmings are great for stew or stir fry. Yep. That's what I did last year. I did 4 Chateaubriands, and then I just kept all the trimmings, and we're still eating the trimmings.
It works. Well, listen, we got to get out of here now. Meathead is sticking around. Excuse me, for the after hours, and we're going to cover some other types of things to cook in the after hours show today. And you can find that on the SoundCloud and all the other platforms we're on. But that's it for the regular terrestrial radio show. And I'd like to thank Meathead for joining us today, our holiday specialist. And we'll be back next week with another edition of Barbecue Nation. And I hope everybody takes care and has a great holiday and a great Christmas. Take care.
You know, for me and, we'll see everybody next year.
You got it, specialist. We'll be back.
Barbecue Nation is produced by JTSD LLC Productions in association with Envision Networks and Salem Media Group. All rights reserved. Copyright 2019.